ever tried watching your athlete's game from anywhere in the world? With Replayer, you actually can. I had a friend watch his son's game live from his flight. My son watched a live game from the car while we were driving up the California coast. It doesn't matter where you are, grandparents across the country, cousins on the other side of the world, teammates who just moved away, set up the camera, hit go live, and everyone with a link is right there on the sideline. Live streaming is free. Unlimited games, unlimited teams, unlimited users. No complex tiers. Everyone gets access. And forget waiting hours for footage. I recorded a 60-minute game, and it was ready in 5 minutes. Players were clipping highlights on the ride home. One camera, made in the USA, unlimited everything. If you never want to miss those moments, head to replayer.com. The link is in the show notes. Hey soccer friends, I just want to give a shout out to our partner, TeamPlayer. They are changing the game on how you find the perfect soccer team for your player. Parents, this means no more endless social media scrolling to find information on teams. With TeamPlayer, everything you need to know is just a few clicks away. It's simple, straightforward, and lets you find the best coach and team for your player without any of the usual headaches. And coaches, we all know how tough it can be to get your team noticed, but when you subscribe to one of TeamPlayer's team plans, you instantly get access to set up an online team profile that allows you to reach more potential players and showcase what your team is all about. It's super easy and lets players and parents see why your team could be the right fit for them. And if you sign up using the promo code PITCH, you can try any team plan free for 1 month. So whether you're managing a team or searching for one, come on over to www.teamplayer.us. That is TeamPlayer.us. And come give TeamPlayer a look.
Family-owned Soccer Innovation is your go-to source for top-quality equipment. Whether you're a player, a supportive family member, or a dedicated coach, they have everything you need to elevate your game. For players, their innovative equipment are designed to boost your skills and performance on the pitch. From their agility cones to their portable goals, they have you covered. And family members, they offer durable equipment that's built to last because we know your support is critical to your player. Coaches, trust me, they can provide the equipment you need to run effective training sessions and shape the next generation of soccer players. Visit Soccer Innovations at soccerinnovations.com to start elevating your game with them.
And if you use the code PITCH, P-I-T-C-H, you can receive up to 10% off your next order. Hey, this is Ian Babcock, your host of Chat by the Pitch. This week, I interviewed Coach Patty with Shamrock FC. Now, this was a very unique interview for me because I actually sat across from him and he shared his experiences, he shared his story, he shared about coaching and Shamrock FC and how he came into coaching and his experience as a player and growing up playing soccer, and he shared quite a bit with me, and I felt like this was a unique situation to share. And I'm doing a share as one whole episode instead of breaking it up into two 30-minute episodes. And I hope you guys enjoy this interview. And let's start this chat and head to the pitch.
My name is Paddy Gallagher from Dublin, Ireland. Came over about 22 years ago. My son gave me a call and said, because I was coming over doing camps for my son. He married an American girl. And gave me a call. Said, Dad, coach has resigned. He's got two teams. I know we were talking about you making the move. If you want to try and do it, now is the time. So I spoke to the wife. She had reservations, obviously. And I said, look, let's put it this way. We'll go over. We'll try it for 6 months. If it doesn't work, we'll come back home. I'll always get a job in soccer, football at the time. I actually had a pretty decent job. I was working in Colossia Ida Junior College, I sent a lot of kids over in soccer scholarships. I'm not sure where there's a couple of them. One is down at Bakersfield, head coach there. Richie Grant is the head coach at Bakersfield. He was my first student that I sent over. They've kept in touch with the school since I left, and there's a good connection there for Irish kids that didn't make the grade in the soccer. There's a good connection there if they want to continue with their soccer and their education. They had a chance of coming to America. Obviously, they had to have the right grades to try and get into the college, and they had to know how to play the game fairly decent, you know. So that's, I'm sticking my chest out, and that's part of, I'm proud of what I tried to do there. Now I'm over in America. I'm looking at the way the game is being played and the way the game is being taught. I'm earning a living. We don't charge an arm and a leg like some of the bigger clubs. I try to give everybody playing time. I played the game myself. I had a decent left foot. That was my claim to fame back in Ireland. I coached with Shamrock Rovers and Bray Wanderers, good teams in the League of Ireland. And I was the reserve team coach and the development coach for their youths.
So you went from playing and coaching at the same time then? Or were you just...
No, I was playing. I wasn't playing pro. I was playing professional with Longford Town, which was a small club. I loved the game. Where I came from was a place called Dedden. It was the inner city, a corporation place. There was a club that I was in as a kid. It was called the Belvedere Newsboys Club. And it was for kids that were selling newspapers on the streets of Dublin, trying to earn a living to supplement the living that their mother and father had. It was a poor area, but it was a great area. You could leave your door open all night and everything would be safe. A very good two people from that club helped me mould into the person that I think I am. Some other people may not think I am that, right? And one of them was Vincent Butler, who was playing, and he was from the brothers, we called them brothers, in the Belvedere Club. They were from the Belvedere College, and they came down 3-4 nights a week. And the club, at night time after we were out selling their newspapers, and the boys from the area that we were in were brought into the club. And you had all sorts of sports, table tennis, billiards, boxing, soccer. And the soccer gym that we had was about the size of this house, which wasn't great. And you'd have about maybe 10 or so on the field, kicking the lard out of each other. It was so much fun. You had to be able to look after yourself. And it developed a lot of very good players. Some of those kids went on from Vincent Butler to represent Ireland. And that's at youth level.
So you played in your youth, then you played as you got older. We talked about it earlier. But did you continue playing from your youth all the way when you had your trade? Or did you stop playing soccer and just
I stopped when I couldn't kick the ball, when I couldn't run.
Okay.
You hear about the kids talking about the games over. The problem here is the kids have got so many choices. You know, back home in Ireland, we had what you call a bouncer. And we used to collect lemonade bottles and bring them to the shop. And he was selling the lemonade bottles, got us the ball, right? So we had that ball out on concrete we were playing, right? And I'm just thinking that some of the guys, they could do things with the ball. You talk about, I'm going to talk about Irish Reds, I'm going to, the Liam Brady's, they could do things with a ball on the concrete. It was awesome thinking back about it, you know. So as kids, what we did then was, there was seven associates operating all over the city of Dublin. And obviously people, you had to, they charged to play them, to play in the seven associates. Well, we had a little team called the Hunters. I think we were about 14 or 15, maybe, yeah, 14 or 15 when we started. It was a place called the Gloucester Diamond. And it was a very famous place in Ireland, in Dublin. Very famous for, it was a seven-a-side concrete pitch with small goals. And that's where the tournaments used to be. And we set up a team between a couple of different areas close to where I lived. Sheriff Street, Gloucester Diamond, Sean McDermott Street. Where the five champions of Ireland, boxing champions of Ireland, lived in the one tenement house. I mean, can you imagine on the weekend after a few pints, you know, what that was like? If the boyhood stuff that I had was freaking awesome. It was just awesome. Every weekend, you know, after playing the soccer and that, you know, you got home and then you'd hear somebody saying, Murder, murder. You knew there was a fight going on down on the, in the middle of the street. There was a couple of guys that haven't fallen out in the pub. So they, like men they were in them days, the cap come off and the coat come off and they were fisticuffs and whoever won the fight. And then what did they do? Shook hands, put their arms around each other, went and had another couple of fights. It was awesome, you know. And I've seen some of the fights. My dad was in a few of them. And it was great to watch. It was great to be involved in them days. Back to the soccer. We had a team called, we used to call them the Hunters. And the reason why we called them the Hunters was we used to go to all the seven-a-sides around the city of Dublin. And we were a very, very good team. We had some very, very talented players. And one of our claims to fame was we had a fella called Eamon Dunphy. I don't know if you ever heard him or not. But he played for Manchester United on the second team, on the reserves. Got a couple of games, I think, for the first team. But he used to come home on his holidays and he used to play with us. Right? Now, Eamon Dunphy's claim to fame was he'd done the autobiography of Roy Keane and U2. He was the ghostwriter for the two of them. I have a photograph in there if you want to see it. Yeah, Eamon used to come back and obviously, you know, the teams you were playing, they used to, you know, they knew Eamon, everybody knew Eamon Dunphy was playing for him, and they used to single him out. Okay, we got to fix him first, you know. It was a great time, and we won a lot of indoor or outdoor tournaments, and it was all played on concrete with what we call a bouncer. And the bouncer was, when you hit it off the ground, it used to bounce up real high. And that's where we learned to control the ball, because if you didn't have a good, decent force touch, the ball used to just bounce away from you, you know. So they were great days. As far as me playing, a local from the Gloucester Diamond, there was a local team called Talbot United. Talbot Street was in the inner city of Dublin. It was just about a mile from, or a half a mile from O'Connell Street, where there was the main thoroughfare through Dublin. So we were right smack in the middle of, can you imagine playing soccer on concrete? You know, and where we used to play at night time, there was a place, it was a hearse, the horses and the carts when people died. And it was a big concrete wall and two gates. One was about 15 foot high by about 20, no, by about 10 foot wide, the two gates. And it was a tin gate and it was great. We used to play a game called, let's play sending in. And that was, you had a fella maybe 20 odd yards away, and he'd knock the ball in, and we'd all be going to try and head the ball into the, and when you head it, and if you hit it right and you hit it hard, the thing used to go wah, wah, wah. It was freaking wah, wah. The day was to try and hit it hard enough and you'd get that wah, 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 wah. So from there, we what we call a junior club, which was you could be playing against a fella nearly twice your age, right? And it was called Talbot United. The National Cup, the FAI, it was called the FAI Junior Cup. You had the FAI Senior Cup, which was for the professionals. The FAI Junior Cup was for what they called junior players. Some of them were semi-pro. And I remember, and we won the FAI, and we got a solid gold medal. Solid 18 karat gold. It was friggin' awesome. I mean, it must have been worth a fortune, you know. And I'll never forget, I missed the chance of picking up two. One of the guys on the team was a drinker. And he sold his thing for a couple of points. Solid gold, about that size. I have it somewhere in the house. But from that, I think it was 17, I went to Shelbourne FC, which was a professional club. I played with their youths. I made a mistake. Friends were playing with Talbot. And I was, come on, you got to come back. We, you know, we have a great team. We're at the line of this. So after a couple of years with Shelbourne FC, the professional club, I went back to my teammates to be with my friends. Later on in my life, I got the chance to go pro. One of the guys I went to, I played with Bohemians, and Bohemians FC, they're a professional club now. At that time, they were an amateur team playing in a professional league in the League of Ireland, Bohemians FC. And I went up for the trial and I was picked. So I was playing for them, an amateur team in a professional league. The professionals now. And from there, I went to play with Longford Town. And they played in the League of Ireland. I stayed with them for about 2 years. And while I was with, when I left Bohemians, Vincent Butler, who was one of the brothers in the Belvedere, county minister. Paddy says, you got a bit of experience. Is there any chance of giving us a dig out with the club? So I felt that all the clubs something keeping me on the straight and narrow off the streets of Dublin. Out of trouble and that. Of course, my dad was one of the ones that kept me out of trouble. He was a bare knuckle fighter. But anyway, Jimmy says, Paddy, we need a hand. So I went and got involved with Belvedere. And I had me on my coaching. That started coach that introduced me to coaching was, he was from England. The FAI worked to do some coaching. A fellow called John Jarman, who was a coach for the English FA, the English Football Association. Mm-hmm. Coaching license, and I just got the bug. I just loved it. I loved the way things, if I had had this when I was 10 years of age, 12 years of age, I could have been the next Liam Brady. This is me thinking back, you know. And some of me pals would say wishful thinking, you know. But putting a hand into my head and taking away the cobwebs. And the game just opened up for me. I became a better player. I went back to playing. It was actually, that's when I went back to playing with Longford Town.
How old were you then?
I think I was about 24, which would be considered old from a point of view of turning professional, you know. Now, I didn't get much, you know. At that time, I think it was a few quid, you know. Wasn't sitting there in any stuff. I got married in the meantime, and Vincent gave me a team. A couple of the guys that I had went on to play League of Ireland. Oh, yes. So then introduced the licenses, and I done my first license in Ireland. Then I wanted to be better. So what I did was I went over to England myself, and I done my prelim, which was the preliminary FA license. I was successful in getting it. And the following year, I went over and done my A license.
It's impressive.
And I didn't make it the first 2 years, right? From where I was to where I was going. And it's great because I played against professional players. On the license, Jeff Nulty, Colin Nugget. There was three or four really, really good players. And I was playing with them. And man, was I having the time of my life. Here I am playing with professionals. I want to be a coach, but man, this is freaking great. It was a 2 week course, and the intensity was fair. It was every day. Every day there were sessions, and then at night time, you'd have the lectures, the theory of the game. And I became a good of the game, the theory of the game, because I figured this stuff is great, you know, the learn the principles of play, you know, attack versus defense. Penetration, possession, all that stuff, you know. Yeah, let me do his reserves, and he had an academy. So, and Shamrock Rovers. Noel King was the head coach then at that time. Noel coach, with a lot of respect for Noel. my thinking of the game, when I learned the principles, my thinking of the game was, it started to open, as I said, the cobwebs came out of my head. There it was in relation to the game. And then I started to follow the game internationally. Now, I went to see Ireland playing. Obviously, we're all Irish kids. I went and seen them playing rugby. We're very parochial, if I can say that, as far as a nation is concerned. You know, we like to support us. And we've created some great world champions. The two ladies that are getting gold in the Olympics or some tournament there a couple of weeks ago. And not to mention the man himself, Connor, with the swagger, you know. And that only has a few million people. We've set the world on fire. Not to mention bringing there, you know, if you look at that picture there, you can see the apocalypse. That's the Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John from the Bible. John McGraw's a couple of years. Alan Wade was still Colossians Association of Football Career Management. And it was, he had a great vision. He went to the college and set it up, and he asked me to do it, to become the coach and run the in the school. Now, I didn't have any degree or anything like that. It was for my football. It was the reason why I got the job. And basically, the premise behind it was that we had a lot of kids going over to England and leaving school at 16 and that. Like what we were talking about earlier, the education stuff. And we had a lot of kids, and they were going out, like the likes of Eamon Dunphy, who never made it fully as a professional. But there was a lot of kids going over from Ireland it was, they were just bringing them over, you know, because they could kick a ball. Some of them couldn't kick a ball, and they were bringing them over and away from their education, or was taking kids away from the game in Ireland. And Alan had a great vision. For some reason, the FAO didn't renew his contract for the likes of me. I politics, like it gets around, that's a good thing. But anyway, it was called the Associated Football Career Management. And basically what it was, we had seven subjects that the kids were studying. Maths, English, fitness, career management, association, soccer, coaching. So that if the kids successful in getting a scholarship to America, which a lot of them were, they now had a coaching license going over to America. So it gave them a bit of a push.
Having, give them the help, yeah.
Having a license, you know, that was recognized by the association. So that's basically it in a nutshell.
Now you own Shamrock, SCRFC.
FC.
FC Football Club, okay.
Started, right, the Odyssey. And I remember Gary Williamson saying to me, Gary was the head coach of North Tyne, Odyssey, what sort of a name is that? You know, I says, if you look at Ulysses, the book, and in it you'll see Odyssey means journey.
Right.
The journey, right? So Gary said, but anyway, we developed a good name. We got some great scholarships for kids. Fame now is any professional about a year or two ago.
Where does he play?
Real Sociedad.
I have no clue then.
And that's in England. Right. Spain.
I don't know who it would be.
Gomez, his name. Jonathan Gomez. I'd say the one or the other. You or John. I think it's Jonathan. But he played for me for a few years. And that's then he went on to become from my academy. But he just got 21 international cap last year, I think it was. 6 months ago, and hopefully, I'm sure he's a fullback. Sometimes I miss the games that he plays because I don't have them on the TV. Because you have to buy every freedom to see all the football, yes. You know.
If you want it to be developed here, you have to let it be easier access.
Well, we'd have a cancellation. Hey, it's lightning and thunder. I said, okay, we're going back to my house. I have a Sabuto. Do you ever hear of Sabuto?
No,
I'm going to show it to you. Principles, you know. Now these kids are,
oh my goodness,
12, 13 that I have. Some of them are 9 years of age. So what I do is, I brought this back from Ireland. I used to use this in my college. It's called Sabudio, and basically what it was
recently.
And yeah. Then I have,
you have little discs,
right? And basically what I do is I explain their systems, right? And I love the three. Whatever it is, but I love playing with the three at the back. Loved the Holland soccer, Johan Cruyff. Loved it. And I played this when we were in college. Now that's, I'm 22 years here. I was in the college for about 10, maybe 12 years. So that's over 30, nearly 30 years ago. And I played this system and I just loved it. And I'll give you the reasons why. And if you want to, you're talking about my philosophy, right? And basically, that's the shape. And the reason being is, you know, you get a three is very, very popular now, right? Or you get the four.
Yes.
4-4-2 was probably the mainstay for years, right?
It's coming back.
It's coming back, yeah. Well, the reason why I do this is that I've got three marking two. Obviously, these guys have got to have legs and got to have the stamina to come up and down the field, right? The other reason for this is that I've got two attackers. So I don't have just one on his own, usually marked by maybe two, but certainly by two, maybe three or four, you know, depending on what the other system is. And basically this is it. And these guys have great freedom to get up and down the field. When it's on this side, this fella comes back. When it's the opposite, we just play it out from the back. Goalkeeper gets the ball. We have two of them doing that. So we play out from the back, and everybody knows I try to play the game properly. That's what I call proper, you know, playing out from the back. Now, obviously, if people say, there's too much tippy-tapping. Yeah. To a certain extent, I think that one of the reasons why the Barcelona, well, he's with City now. What's his name? I'm drawing a blank. The coach at City.
Oh, Pep.
Pep. Right. I think that's the reason why that was too much TPT. It was overdone. So, and I say to them, look, the reason we have a good force touch is when you need a good force touch is that you can play.
Right.
If you don't have a good force touch, you're going to struggle. You're going to get your good. I always refer to the domino effect. Bad touch, bad pass leads to a bad pass, dispossession leads to a goal. That's one of my mantras, you know. So I bring the kids in and I just say to them, okay, this is the way we're playing. What do you think you should be doing there when this is here? When that's, you know, just broad view of where people should be and what they do when the ball's on the other side, what you do when the other team has the ball, what's your shape like, positions. So I try to educate the kids in the position they're playing in and one another position, maybe two.
So do you teach player role versus position or position then player role?
I think if you're not in position, if you're not in the right position.
Right. I'm saying that, but if you're playing midfield,
right,
there's the midfield role versus the midfield position, where if you're playing...
I don't see a separation.
You don't see... This is where I have taken a stance as a parent, because I've learned, if I teach Landon the role of a midfield, I can use my kid only because that's the example I have. He understands if he's playing a right midfielder or a left midfielder, or if they eventually have to switch at some point of time, he understands the role of the midfield. It's not so much he is playing the left or right midfield. It's this is the boundaries where the midfield plays. This is the role that you play. Or do you keep it as one?
If you put boundaries, it kind of, I think it stops the flow of the game.
Right. But I'm saying he won't be doing the role of the forward. So if you're playing.
Why?
Because if the forward moves back, and you're going to more towards.
Yeah, well, so this is
the thing.
But
right?
This is the Cruyff thing, you know.
The total football, yeah.
Total football. So if he's a left forward, he's a centre half. What's wrong with him if they do this?
But that allows them to understand the role of the midfield. They moved up to the role of the forward. Now they understand the role, and maybe not so much left or right, but this is their job, why they're in this area, which allows the total football to be more.
The main job is the role, right? Within that role, it's like tentacles.
Yes.
It's all connected, you know?
Yes. And that's why I always view it as the role versus position, because when you're talking about parents that have 5-year-olds, my kid plays the left wing, and they get so stuck on one third of the field over, and that's it.
I know what you're trying to say. And the other thing is, you know, well, this is my man. Okay, if your man goes out here to go to the toilet, you're going to follow him. You know. So right. The kid said, well, I'm marking this fella, you know. Hey, he's saying, my man is out there. No, your man ain't out there. Your man is the man nearest to the ball if you're nearest to the ball.
Right. So it's... You see what I'm saying? Is that yeah. Because we don't have a great concept of the game here, because soccer is becoming more and more popular, parents only associate it with sports they already know. And I feel like, use American football, if you're a wide receiver, you know what your role is. You're going to go out there and catch the football sooner or later. But in soccer, I feel like it's an ebb and flow. It's a constant flow of the game.
Yeah,
and
but the football game is driven by the coach.
Right.
It's the opposite. And you know, the coach gives you the tools. Well, now you're the player out there. It's driven by the players. It should be.
Right. And that's exactly what I'm getting at, is this is why I asked about the whole...
player role.
Player and position, because I feel like the role of the player, if they understand what everyone does on the pitch, no matter where they're at, if they're out of position for whatever reason, if the forward went back because they were chasing the ball, that midfielder now knows they need to... Someone needs to go fill that position.
Right.
A good example is... they will send FC Dallas, I can use them as an example because we watch a lot of their matches, is that one of their center backs will go up, go play in the box to crash the box.
Well, why is that?
Because they need the taller players, or they're trying to create an imbalance in the box.
It's overload.
Right, it's overload.
So, I mean, what's the sense of having 3 players at the back here, right? Because that's the way this system goes when we're defending.
Right.
So, if we keep the back, how are we going to get through all these players that's there? And you know that this player is probably the most important man now in defense as far as international and national leagues. The goalkeeper.
Right. The goalkeeper and center back, in my opinion.
De Gea can't, he's not up to the level that his manager wants him to play. And that's playing out from the back, right? So these, you are, if you're, You know, sometimes say, well, when I'm playing forward, you know, hey, if you're the nearest man to the ball, you're the defender.
Exactly.
If they have the ball, your label doesn't come on up here. Right? You don't have a label, I'm a forward only or I'm a defender only, right? If it's on to go back, or let's use the other positive, if it's on to go forward, that's your job. Right. It doesn't matter if you're playing centre-back or not. But what happens when you're talking about the centre-back with FC Dallas, the reason they do that is to overload.
Right.
And you have to try and overload in all areas. Now, obviously, sometimes you'll have a big centre-forward and then...
And this, like, this board is a prime example that you have, is that this doesn't get brought out. My son tried out for a team, and they try every 2 weeks to have a game video. A video
night. Sit down.
Yeah. A video night to talk about tactics and teams.
Right.
And I feel like technology can be hedged in the right way. And I feel like a club like yours, because, I mean, it's so expensive.
Too expensive.
And it comes down to how the coach and the philosophy. So how many coaches are in your club then? Is it just you, or is it you have a couple more?
Just me.
Just you.
So I have an assistant. He's tough for me. He does a lot of and I'm telling him when we're doing the physical stuff, there's got to be ball involved. You know, we train with the ball, we play with the ball, so we train with the ball. And he's pretty decent. I've been trying to encourage him to do the coaching licenses. So far, he hasn't made the jumpy. I don't know whether he's intimidated by it or not. I don't know.
I'm to the point now with American coaching license that when I got my grassroots all done, I was getting ready to go take my D, and then the issue happened. I got all my hands on all the material I could, and it was talking about letting the game teach the ball. And now I'm seeing all these coaches that are coming out of their licensing course, just, oh, let the game teach the ball. It's not my job to step in. And this is something that I watch. It's when we have gone to tryouts, will the coach stop gameplay if they aren't doing what the drill is set up for? Yes, they follow the play, practice, play model, but the play still has some substance in it that they're trying to teach. If you don't stop the play to explain what they're doing wrong, why they're clustering, or why they are not spreading out well, they are learning bad habits then in the play part. And this is why I'm asking, is because if you have your philosophy and other coaches, it's how do you keep it all within? But from the sounds of it, you work very closely with your assistant coach to keep the philosophy of the play style there. Because something like this mat is awesome.
Well, see this.
I made one of these.
I mean, if you want to watch a game that goes from one end to the other all the time, you know, I mean, at the end of the day, the penetration has to happen. Now, if you just do penetration, it's not going to work. So the possession is for a reason, and you suck them in, and then you get in behind them.
Right.
And get players in behind
them. I recently learned, because of my lack of knowledge, is when a team's playing a low block, the only way you can break it is by a true long switch. And it took me a long time to like, oh, that actually makes sense. Because you have all the traffic in the low block on one side, and if you quickly switch it to the far side, you can do your counterattack. And this was having a conversation with a coach after a game. And he's sitting there explaining to my son, who's 9, this, and my son's asking questions now beyond my scope of understanding of the game.
Yeah.
And I'm the adult here.
Well, that's good.
And that's why I think having something like this where you can sit down and explain is missing. A game review, if you're able to do it. Are you guys able to do stuff like that with your players? Or
well, this is a game review.
Okay.
You know, I might go back. Hey, this is the drill we did the other day. Now, what are we changing around when we do this? You know, so I'm just trying to get the kids to think.
Right.
That's the whole premise of this, is to just get the kids to think.
I feel like... So you're truly trying to develop this understanding of the whole game through different avenues than just on the pitch. It is...
Well, we don't need, just so that you use this is the weather. Well, now we're complaining about it being too hot, right? And we've got to be careful with that. So I bring them in. So I don't use this all the time. It's just as a substitute for what we should be doing on the field.
And so where do you guys practice then?
We practice at in Watauga, the Watauga Community Center.
Okay.
It's on Springfield Road.
Yep, just by the elementary, middle school, or what was right there?
It's a lot of the kids.
It's a very nice facility, right?
Yeah.
There, the fields are gorgeous, well maintained.
They're well maintained, and but playing on, they're not maintained for. It's a nice park.
No, yeah, they're maintained.
The grass is nice and tight. There's no ruts or anything like that.
Yeah, we were just there a few weeks last Thursday and Friday. So you practice off with Tiger. What leagues do you guys play in?
I'm what are the two players? I'm trying to play at the top level if we can, right? I don't think we're there yet. I spoke to Distant, and he kind of conveys a lot of my stuff to the parents. I'm talking maybe about doing Plano to give me a year to develop them for the next level. I don't want to go into a situation where there's too much pressure on the kids, not from me, from the parents, the winning stuff, you know? So, I mean, it's not going to be perfect all the time. Sometimes I lose the head, you know. Hey, you're not walking. Yeah, clear your mind. That's a good way of saying it. Are picking her up. Some of them won't pick it up, no matter how much you know. That is a
homework is very like that is something.
I'm sorry, I don't have one because I just gave it to him yesterday to bring them down the weekend. And basically, it's homework sheet. There's different moves.
If you can.
And the other thing is that the parents are involved. The parents have to make sure that they got to do at least 30 minutes every day when they're not with me with a ball.
Love it.
It doesn't happen. I'm sure some of them do it, you know. But the parents, so it's if I say the homework, right, the parents have to sign off on it.
Gotcha. So what ages do you have then for coaching right now?
At the moment, we've got a mixture of kids, right? And it's from to 9-year-olds.
So 2024.
2014, my goodness. 14. Yeah. I have that list where, you know, they have the ages.
Yes, my son's at 2014, that's why I know. Players do you keep on roster based on, so if you're playing 9v9, 7v7, or 11v11, do you keep...
11v11, I wouldn't go over 18. And that's purely because of injuries and commitments.
Nope, that's about on average. I know that some clubs will do 22 just because of especially during the high school, when they start playing high school soccer, and also that they'll...
Still no excuse for having 22 on the roster.
Right, but that's the reason, and injuries.
The other thing is that the younger kids, I hate throwing kids away. I won't throw a kid away if he's got the balls to get in and fight now, you know. I'm a fighter myself, and that's the way I played myself. As I said, I had a decent left foot. The younger ones, I don't want any more than 4, maybe 5 sitting on the bench.
That's another common number. And I also think of practicing, you can't really practice with...
Yeah.
If you're playing 9v9, you can play 7v7 if you have 14 kids, then, which is close enough for 9v9.
Yeah.
To get out there and run through things. And that's the other side of this. Is that, and normally, how many teams then do you have? Since it's you and assistant. So I'm assuming...
I've only one at the moment.
One at the moment.
Looking to make a second team.
And what age group are you looking to build then? U9 can play... 11v11 will be kind of hard, but they can play... They're going to 9v9 right now.
Yeah.
I guess with U13s, they're on the cusp, if I'm remembering right. At U14, they switch over to 11v11. Or is it U13?
I'm not really sure, to be honest with you. To tell you the truth, my manager does a lot of that stuff.
Okay.
I just give me this, give me a club ball and give me a gang of players and let me do my job. That stuff, that's the money and all that stuff.
He handles.
No, I keep an eye on it, right?
You have to, right. So we've talked about it with your, I can't pronounce it, Subutio board?
Subutio
board. You play more of Johan Cruyff style total football then. Do you teach more of the total football mentality playing? Or because you said you play a 3-5, 1-2. Do you want them to play more of the total football style, or do you want them to be more regimented in this until they get the style down?
No, the kids have got to learn how to play the game. It's total football.
Love it. As a parent, that's what I like to hear.
When I thought, you know, I'm a Man United fan. First game, 12 years of age, George Best, Dennis Law, Bobby Charlton. Oh, Christ, what a group, right? They were my team. Now, they laugh and joke with the kids. They come down with a Liverpool shirt. Hey, don't come down with that again. And, you know, the kids know me, you know, and saying, I'm shitty. You got it, did you? Man City. Yeah, yeah, and the kids love it, you know. And they know I'm joking, but they know I'm a United fan. And the reason I'm a United fan because of all these great players. And, you know, I send them out clips of George Best scoring them 7 goals. I think it was against Fulham. Unbelievable. In one game, 7 freaking goals.
That's just crazy.
So, yeah, and I try to get the kids to look at the better teams. Now, I'm a Man United fan. Don't look at Man United. Look at City play. Look how Pep does. Look how possession play.
So are you... You talk about possession, I think, of when you talk about EPL, I think of Tottenham Spurs last 2 seasons ago. They had 99 passes before they shot on goal.
Right.
And that just blew my mind that they had 99 complete passes, didn't lose possession, and then finally shot on goal. I don't think they even scored, but to have 99 passes in a row is even unheard of at that level.
Well, it's unheard of, and it's kind of, from a coaching point of view, I think it's ridiculous. 99 passes. I mean, which way were you going? Or, I mean, half of that was probably in this half of the field.
Right.
Goalkeeper, right? So is that for kids now?
But I always use that as the extreme case of with my son as possession ball. And I'm learning that when you're talking to parents, what advice do you give them when they hear, like, just kick the ball down the field and score a goal, where possession's part of the key because... First, it gives your players a chance to catch a breather, and it makes the defense get tired because they have to chase the ball. And we as Americans, most of us, don't understand soccer and how having possessions can change the tempo of the game.
Well, we don't possession for possession's sake.
No.
We don't kick the ball along for the sake of kicking along. It's to deal with the principles. When to press, when to penetrate, when to speed up the play. We've gone over here and we've all sucked off. Okay, if we can get the ball quickly and we've got a speedster here, maybe Ryan Giggs 1v1 or 1v2, that's great. Go and take them on.
And I think that's what's missing. And how do you have conversations with parents or explain to parents have questions about style of play that you do? Because...
It's a dangerous game to get into.
It's not. It's not so much worrying about what they have to say. It's worrying about what questions they ask. Because when I come to a coach and ask my question, half my opinion will come from watching a coach play in a game, how they coach a game, and the other one third will see how they run their practice, and the other part will be what tactics they use to get to that point. And it's not so much worrying about what I have to say, because at the end of the day, you're the coach. You're not going to change what your philosophy is, who you are as a coach.
Right.
But it is coming to me and explaining to me, dumbing it down to parents or explaining it down to parents so they understand your tactics. Because at the end of the day, most people won't understand it.
Here's the deal when parents get involved, right? With that. So the game is over here, right? And something's happening here, right? Okay. The same situation from a possession point of view is here. Oh, well, you told him to do that here. But then, okay, we're here. Same situation. We're in a different part of the field.
Right.
You know, so what happens here, it's going to relate to what part of the field the ball is at.
The defending half versus the attacking half.
And how many players is around the ball and that, you know. I will answer questions. I never back away from anything, you know.
It's just trying to give... I guess, peace of mind to parents, because I feel like a lot of parents, we get the, oh, just trust us mentality. And me as a parent, I'll give you the chance to give you trust. I'll give you time. I'll give you a season or game or go play in a tournament with you to see how your team behaves, how you coach, let my kid practice with you, because it's the only way they can actually understand you as a coach. Then you have that conversation with your player. It's like, my 9-year-old says, I don't want to go back to this coach. I don't like how they do X, Y, and Z. And then we'll converse. My wife and I will talk about that. But then we're like, why? Why don't you like this? Because from our perspective, this is the right method.
Right. But if you can explain and get a parent on your side, obviously, you know. But I got a kid now, and I know he tried somewhere else. He was with me. When he came to me at Forest, I said, this kid is going to be okay. He's got lazy. Not got lazy, he was lazy, because I got lazy or lazy, and the story, whether it's this time or that time. But it ended up that the dad said about lifting him up, right? And I'm all for that. But it says, if your kid is lazy, there's no lifting up a lazy player. He's frigging not running. It's not rocket science. You just have to get your legs moving from there to there. And I didn't say lazy. I said she's not working hard.
I have learned not to use the word lazy with my son. It's using the word hustle, because I feel like there's a huge difference. Because, yeah. And I had a coach explain this to me recently. He says, if you want your kid to hustle, you need to teach them how to hustle in every aspect of their life, not just on the pitch. If they aren't letting a hustle at home doing their chores, they aren't letting a hustle on the pitch. If they aren't letting a hustle in school and get good grades, they aren't going to hustle on the pitch. Because they don't have to have straight A's. It doesn't mean that they aren't hustling. They're doing their best.
Right.
At everything they're doing.
But that has to come with hustle. In my, where I come from, is physicality, hard pressed running.
Yeah.
It's nothing to do with hustling in school. Yeah, you're getting your grades. There's no hustle there. It's not a physical thing. The hustle to me is physical.
Right. But he was just using this as an example, because he goes, if you want to take the laziness out of a kid, they have to take it out of every aspect of their life.
Right.
And apply 100%. And I hate using that analogy to everything they do. And with that being said, it's on the soccer pitch. If they don't have the drive within inside themselves, how do you light that fire in them to have that? And it has to come within the kid. The coach can't do it. The parent can't do it. The kid has to do it. And how
that kid, that the dad came to me, if he's not here, he's going to be, you know, and the kid is lazy. Physicality is not good, you know, even. And I said it to him, I says, did you do your homework? And he looks at me. And once he looks at me, I know. I says, you didn't, did you? You didn't. He says, no, how do you expect to get better? Your dad, and then I give him the dad, and the mom can go to a movie instead of paying me what they're paying me, you know.
And I think that's what's breaking down in the American society, is holding the standard. The top teams, because I don't consider any team in the United States an elite team, because elite is overused and over and everything. Come to our elite training session. I'm like, no, it's not elite. It's just standard training session. It's just like all the alphabet leagues and pre-ECNL and all this pre-stuff. It's like, no, it's just a money grab. Like, parents have to really see what they're being taught. Because at the end of the day, if you have a player that is really shining, really growing, are you going to hold them back and say, no, you need to go work with this coach. This is a coach I trust. He's going to put you to the next level, because I can't get you there.
Right.
On this team. Is that something you would be doing, or is that be something you would be?
Well, it's so, I mean,
because that's a hard thing to give up as a talented player.
Tell me about it. Come on, I'll show you. This really, it's done a bit, you know, but me thinking, coached. JP, the second fella, SMU, full ride. The third fella, Rice, Notre Dame, full ride. The second fella, from the goalkeeper, Connor, Cal South, full ride. Now, it was the others, this fella here is now, he's kicking shit out of football. He got a scholarship
right.
Kicking, which is great. And I say this to my kids, I said, look, this is a great game. If you can get your marks and your stuff and become a good player, right? You don't have to be a great player, but a good player, and get an education. I says, you see that? And I mentioned a coach. He's getting 130 a year, 130,000 a year. And I says, not only that, and I says, and so it's one of the guys that I know. And I says, not only that, but I says, I says, you may not make it as a coach. It's the way your education comes in. You could become a manager. You could become an agent. There's so many avenues. You could become a physiotherapist. There's so many avenues in the game that you could make a great living. Imagine those, I'd mention the name of a player. What do you think he's getting a week, you know? And obviously I'd inflate it a little bit, 30,000 a week. And the jaw drops. And I say, now I says, Ronaldo, I says, when he was your age, I says, all he did was kick the ball because he wanted to be a right player. And all his friends used to talking about all the beautiful girls that they're going with. And he says, what did I do? He says, I made all the money I could make and still make him. And he says, and I married one of the most beautiful women in the world.
Right.
So, you know, and so you're trying to do these. Come here. I told you about the Gloucester Diamond.
Yes.
Eamon Dunphy. That's me here. See this little fella? He was like Garincha.
Okay.
He was a small fella. He was older than the rest of us, you know, but he's only this size. But he real fast he was. He was freaking brilliant. Nibber Martin, he was his friend. Dunphy used to come home and stay with him. But that's the diamond, the Gloucester Diamond. Now, if you've seen the big picture, it's surrounded by tenement flats. And you see all the women and the men looking out the window at the game. And on the roofs, it was taken from an air. I don't know how they did it. Well, they had planes then. But I played with the junior team, and that was the FA Cup.
And you guys won.
That we won. Junior national team. That's the good-looking fella there. John McRovers. We were in Holland when that was taken. And this is when I come over first. This is my son and when we come over first. Who is this?
Oh, yeah, I know.
And obviously, the three of the best players ever in the world. Pelé said George Best was the best player ever.
Huh.
Pelé said it. This is when he played with the Cosmos.
Right.
When the professional thing started and they all start going, Franz Beckenbauer and all, they all start going down to where it was in Florida.
Now,
since this, so, you know.
Yeah. How well do your kids, your players take to you sharing these
intensity?
Sharing these experiences. Oh. Sharing it with them so they understand the reality of it, because there is a reality, and to have them come down from it, because I feel like there is a huge disconnect for kids because they only hear about the Ronaldos, the Messis, and they don't see what they can do. They don't have a chance to go watch the Vaqueros, the Diablos, North Texas, because they're the...
Well, I'll bring my kids to see FC Dallas. Well, we've been to FC Dallas.
Is there any message you'd like to leave with families to... when they come out, and or information you can share that they would appreciate?
Try and get your kid not to set up a mediocrity. Try and get your kid to set a standard. Try and get your kid to look at somebody that's been successful at the game and maybe go into his background, how he became a player. You know, and Ronaldo, I think, is one of them, you know. But at the end of the day, it's in the backyard. When you're not training with your coach or your team, that you're practicing your skills. Now, the skills and the skills, you know, on the stage, you know, the
right.
Ring him a circus where he has to see and then he's flipping the ball over his head. If it doesn't happen on the field, don't practice.
What was, I think, anyone, no, it was Croft. Anyone can juggle the ball 1,000 times. It's passing the ball at the right moment, at the right time. That's how you have skill. It's not... Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Champ on the Pitch. Now, as I have edited and re-edited this episode, I've gotten to listen to it probably a dozen times now. Listening to Patty talk about his experience playing really took me back to a time in my life when I would spend listening to the adults around me share their stories of growing up. And listening to him talk about his time playing soccer and how it really developed who he is as an adult is remarkable. And the stories he shared in this episode are awesome. Not get as much as I wanted about Shamrock FC, but Patty's story was awesome. Listening to what he said, he really hit something that hit home with me. He goes, a bad first touch is a bad pass to the next bad pass, to loss of possession to a goal. When we watch our kids develop, what are we worrying about at the end of the day? Are we worrying about that W? Are we truly focusing on their development? For him to say that is really his philosophy, is teaching that first touch so the next pass is a good pass, so the next pass after that's a good pass, and the next one, next thing that might follow is a shot or a pass might come out of that, really shows you who he is as a coach. Such a small little detail says a lot. Well, I really hope you all enjoyed it. Now, if you like this episode, please rate it. Please rate the podcast. Please share it with everyone you know, because I would love for this to grow and more people to listen and more people to listen to these stories. I try to keep these clean so kids can hear them in the car with you, so they can hear these stories. Sometimes it's hard, but this week I feel like kids need to hear these stories because they're lost over time, and I feel like I had a chance to listen to him share his story and coaching and philosophy. So until next time, I'll see you at the pitch.